From Du Bois to Connellsville, Gettysburg to Jersey Shore, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Northeast Rail Corridor is a vital transportation link for Philadelphia and eastern Pennsylvania, but aged infrastructure is in dire need of repair or replacement. Michael Friedberg of the Coalition for the Northeast Corridor is here with details. Helping people with mental and physical challenges reach their highest potential is the mission of Aspire. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Jim Kales of Aspire in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And Pennsylvanians already pay the highest gas taxes in the nation, but an increase in the federal gas tax could have us paying even more. Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Michael Friedberg in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania House of Representatives this past week voted 109-80 to reduce the size of the legislature. The proposed constitutional amendment would reduce the number of House members from 203 to 151 and the number of senators from 50 to 38. The measure now goes on to the state Senate, where its fate is uncertain. If the Senate approves, voters will have the final say in a statewide referendum. Supporters say Pennsylvania's legislature is too large and expensive. Those opposed to the proposal point out that larger districts will increase the importance of money and special interests while reducing the impact of grassroots campaigning. The eyes of the nation were on Pennsylvania's 18th congressional district this past week when a special election was held to fill the seat left vacant by the resignation of former Congressman Tim Murphy, who was embroiled in a scandal. Unofficial results show Democrat Connor Lamb edging Republican Rick Saccone by just a few hundred votes. The official vote count and possible recounts must still occur. Lamb's apparent victory in a district Donald Trump carried by 20 percentage points is being viewed by national Democrats as a bellwether for this fall's elections. However, Democrats do hold a 60,000 voter registration edge over Republicans in the district, which lies to the south and east of Pittsburgh. Making matters more complicated, under the new maps imposed by the state Supreme Court, Lamb will no longer reside in the district, but rather will be pitted against incumbent Congressman Keith Rothfuss. All three candidates vying for the Republican nomination to take on incumbent Governor Tom Wolf say they will not release their personal tax returns. In recent past elections, candidates have released their tax returns, but following the lead of President Donald Trump, who refused to release his returns in 2016, the three Republicans, Scott Wagner, Paul Mango, and Laura Ellsworth, say they will keep their tax information private. Governor Wolf did release his tax returns when he first sought office 4 years ago. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. The Northeast Rail Corridor from Washington, D.C. to Boston is one of the most heavily traveled passenger rail lines in the nation. The future of that rail line hangs in the balance, though, as Congress debates investing in transportation infrastructure. Michael Friedberg is executive director of the Coalition for the Northeast Corridor. He joins us now to discuss the importance of the rail line and what needs to be done to keep it operational. Michael, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Michael, when we talk about infrastructure, let's start out at sort of the 50,000-foot level here. Usually when people talk about infrastructure, they think about roads and bridges. Give us a bit of an overview as to the importance and the condition of the nation's rail lines.
We have, and it's not anybody's fault, but when in the 1950s, we started with really, really good railroads. And Eisenhower decided, let's have a national highway system. And for the last 60 years, we've focused on roads and bridges for cars. So what happened is we left the rail infrastructure in kind of a state of disrepair. So, and we're seeing it now, where, especially on the Northeast Corridor, which is kind of the main corridor for commerce, 30% of the nation's economy goes through D.C. to Boston. A lot of those railroads were built in the 19th century, so 1800s. Lincoln President Lincoln rode on those railroads, and they haven't been really updated since. So we're seeing it, and right now there is a $50 billion, with a B, dollar need on the Northeast Corridor just to fix the infrastructure that was built back then. We're not talking about getting to Maglev, which is a cool train that Japan has, or Hyperloop, or any of those cool things, which would be awesome. I'm just talking $50 billion to keep the current infrastructure running. So when you're delayed on a SEPTA train or going up to New York on the Amtrak, it's most likely because of the infrastructure, how old it is, and it needs money to fix.
When you talk about the Northeast Corridor, for those who are listening who may not be familiar with where it is, what it is, give us a bit of an explanation as to what we mean when we talk about the Northeast Rail Corridor.
The Northeast Corridor, we actually defined it in law, where it is the railroad from D.C. to Boston, which includes Baltimore, Newark, Delaware, Philadelphia, then goes to New Jersey, up through New York City, and then goes to Connecticut and Rhode Island and Boston. And we actually technically own that, or Amtrak owns that, and Amtrak is kind of a quasi-governmental entity. So that is where we actually could put the money in without dealing with other railroads. Most of the rail infrastructure in America is owned by the freight railroads. So the exception is the Northeast Corridor, and that's where kind of it's primed for investment because we own it. We have a really good, we have the best freight rail network in the world, and that is privately owned. But the public rail, and I consider the Northeast Corridor more of a commuter kind of network, where it's these large regions and cities like Philly to D.C., Philly to New York, and then you have commuter railroads that run on that track too. So for Philly and Pennsylvania, SEPTA and New Jersey Transit, or Delaware Rapid Transit as well. So that is kind of the Northeast Corridor, this spine. And if you've ever taken the Amtrak, they run on the Northeast Corridor. They own it, but they also, 90% of the traffic is commuter rail. So think SEPTA.
And this, of course, one of the most heavily populated areas of the entire country. You've mentioned, Mike, that we have a lot of antiquated infrastructure here with rails, tunnels, et cetera. What has the safety record been on this corridor in recent years?
I still think it's very safe. Amtrak and all rail has a very safe culture, but we have seen some accidents and derailments because of some delayed in infrastructure. We're investing in positive train control, which is a safety mechanism. It is still safe, and they will not run rail that is not safe. However, because of that, they do stop trains a lot, and it's delayed. So if there is a catenary, which is the electrification that makes the trains run, if that is dilapidated, they'll stop the train. And when one train stops, it's not like you could go around. If a bridge and tunnel is not working, there's no other way to go around, like cars or planes, so you are just stuck. So if you've ever gotten stuck behind a train on the Northeast Corridor, it might be a freight train, it might be a Amtrak train, might be a commuter, it stops the whole network from D.C. to Boston.
We are talking with Michael Friedberg, who is Executive Director of the Coalition for the Northeast Corridor. We are talking today about the nation's rail infrastructure, specifically commuter rail, and specifically the Northeast Corridor, which, of course, has an enormous impact on Philadelphia and southeastern Pennsylvania, and then by extension, all across the Commonwealth. So we have the president now, Michael, proposing to make a massive investment in infrastructure. Again, the emphasis is on roads and bridges. What is the president proposing to do about rail, and specifically commuter rail?
Well, that's a good question. Right now, there is $20 billion over the next 2 years that was put in for the budget. And $10 billion a year will go to infrastructure. And there's a huge push by Republicans like Ryan Costello out of Philadelphia to get it for the Northeast Corridor because there's a $50 billion backload. And now that's where the politics of D.C. becomes important. And this is why we need people's voices to be heard. Because if you think about it, we are in a landmass of very small part of the country, but we are 30% of the economy. But if you look at the geographics of politics, there's only 16 senators that represent the Northeast Corridor and 84 senators that don't. So when every politics is local, we need more national business to make this a national issue. So 30th Street Station is a perfect example. What Drexel and Amtrak are doing, that's going to be bringing many more jobs to the region, and it actually helps the nation's GDP. We have a member, Guardian Life Insurance, of the coalition, and they have done an internal study, and if the corridor shuts down, they lose $40,000 an hour, and they sell life insurance. That's just in commuting and lack of productivity. So that is what we're trying to message, but it's hard because there's great needs everywhere. We just need to mobilize and show that, you know, Philly, New York, New Jersey, Delaware, which, again, it's $50 billion, it's a national need. So we have champions in Pennsylvania. We have Charlie Dent, who's been a big champion, Ryan Costello, Pat Meehan, and that's just Republicans. All the Democrats want this too. So we're trying to mobilize to try to get this as a national priority.
What does keeping this infrastructure, no pun intended, up to speed, what does it mean to the economy that we invest in this and continue to have this rail option available?
I think of rail and commuter rail not just as it's one mode, right? So we have members that are of the coalition that drive trucks on 95, but they realize that if the rail shuts down, the commuter rail, then more cars are going to be on 95. And I've been on Philly roads. I'm from Scranton. I mean, you do not want traffic. So think about it as productivity. So we want Philadelphia. We want that region, southeastern Pennsylvania, to be welcome to companies. And look at Amazon. Amazon's picking a city based on their availability to transit. So if this breaks down, companies are going to go either other parts of the country or probably other parts of the world. And it will bring more jobs. And I'm not talking the jobs when you spend billions of dollars, we will create jobs just in spending. I'm not talking about those jobs. I'm talking about companies wanting to come and locate in Philadelphia or stay in Philadelphia. Think of all the drug companies around Pennsylvania, New Jersey. You know, all those people that work there, they rely on these railroads and transit to get to work, and they have nothing to do with transportation. Those are the people that we need to have our voices heard. We need to make them a priority. You know, a lot of the CEOs of the non-transportation companies, transportation is like their number two priority. Well, in D.C., only things that are people's number one priority get funded. So that's what we're trying to do is we brought a bunch of businesses together. We have 20 members that are making this a number one priority.
Again, we have been talking with Michael Friedberg, who is executive director of the Coalition for the Northeast Corridor. Michael, tell us just a bit about the coalition, also where folks can go on the web to get information.
Our website is www.coalitionforthenec.com. Again, www.coalitionforthenec.com. We formed because there has not been one entity like this before of business, not just transportation companies, but just regular business companies caring about rail infrastructure. We have coalitions for highways and aviation and maritime. We in ports, but there's never been one for commuter and passenger rail. And as we're seeing the economy go more into people not driving and people not wanting to fly, we're seeing the Northeast Corridor being much more used. And we thought to mobilize to advocate in D.C. to be a thought leader in this, and we're succeeding. We've gotten money in the House bill, $500 million for Northeast Corridor, newly authorized program that Bill Schuster authorized in the FAST Act. He's a congressman from Western Pennsylvania, and we're trying to fund that, which will be the first time actually ever that passenger and commuter rail will be funded.
Michael Friedberg of the Coalition for the Northeast Corridor. Michael, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you so much.
Aspire works daily to help people with physical and mental disabilities and their families integrate into jobs and society. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Jim Kales, president and CEO of Aspire, on this Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Jim, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. Jim, share with the listeners a little bit about your organization and what you do there.
Aspire is an organization focused on lifting up kids and adults with disabilities. What really excites me about Aspire is the way we do that. We're focused exclusively on the idea of inclusion. How do we help include kids and adults with disabilities into our world So into schools, into workplaces, into our neighborhoods. And I think the way we work at Aspire is pretty unique because we really think more like a business. We think outside of the box, and we are doing a lot of things like entrepreneurs would. We're starting new enterprises and coming up with some pretty innovative ideas, and I think we're making progress on this idea of inclusion.
As you explain yourself on your website, you're recognized throughout Illinois as a leader in providing this bold, pioneering, and uncompromising services to children and adults with developmental disabilities, and you work out of Chicagoland. What can organizations similar to yours throughout the country learn from what you're doing in Chicagoland?
We're rooted in Chicago, but we get to collaborate and talk to other nonprofits in this field across the country, and we love doing that. There's a movement sweeping the country right now. People being very open to the idea of, hey, people with Down syndrome, people with autism, kids with cerebral palsy, they've got something to give. They've got something to contribute. Let's include them. And it always wasn't that way. You know, for many years in the 50s, 60s, even in the 70s, that the norm was to exclude or even institutionalize people with disabilities. Now we find there's a movement where people are really open to this idea, but they may not know how. And so we talk with companies. We work with a lot of Fortune 500 companies, for example, and we help them really work in the Chicagoland area, making sure they're including people with disabilities in their retail operations, their warehousing operations, their manufacturing operations, even their headquarters. But a lot of times those companies have operations in other parts of the country, Pennsylvania, Texas, California, wherever. And so the companies sometimes will come to us and say, hey, can you connect us to a good nonprofit doing this work in Philadelphia or in Dallas or in Los Angeles? And we love doing that. Number one, because it extends our work, but we often learn a lot from those other nonprofits working in these other areas. We don't know all the answers, and it's great to learn from other people.
You're doing this in Chicagoland, you're collaborating with organizations across the country. There's some bias out there, and it's well-intended much of the time, that people with developmental disabilities aren't able to survive in a workplace. What does somebody with a developmental disability bring to the workplace? And what kinds of, and speak specifically to the kinds of things you're training them to do.
If you take someone with autism or Down syndrome, there are things they won't be able to do, but there's certainly things I can't do. I'm not a great golfer. There's a lot of other things I can't do. And I like to look at it from an abilities perspective. We really focus here at Aspire on the abilities that the person has. Yes, there may be five or six things that someone with autism can't do particularly well. There may be three or four things that somebody with Down syndrome can't do particularly well. There may be 100 things they can do really, really well. And so we really want to focus on those things they can do well and even maybe exceed the abilities of the general population, which is a pretty amazing concept. So let's dig into that. Let's look at some industries we're working in here in Chicagoland. We've been a real pioneer at Aspire in working with companies in the warehousing or supply chain area, distribution centers. You know, if you order something from Amazon or Best Buy or any of those companies, a lot of us are doing online ordering, that all routes through a distribution center or a warehouse. Those are great opportunities to hire people with autism or other disabilities because sometimes they're very, very good with repetitive work. We've done a lot of work with Office Max and Office Depot, for example, and we found that often folks with autism can exceed the skills of the general population in the warehousing distribution center field because they're very good with repetitive work.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Jim Kales, the president and CEO of Aspire, an organization working with people with developmental disabilities in Chicago. Jim, you do say also that you work with their families. How's the bridge made between the family and the individual that you're training to get into the workforce?
I think working with the families from a personal gut standpoint, that's one of the most enjoyable and rewarding parts of my job. Joe as CEO here at Aspire, because usually, if not always, mom and dad are the biggest backers of the people we work with. They believe in them. They never give up in them. And we just worked with a young woman who has autism to help her get placed at a really prominent corporate headquarters here in Chicago. And we had a meeting of that company, 200 people. They're called Medics Corporation. And she got up in front of them. Her name is Sonia. She got up in front of all of them and spoke. And her mom was standing a few paces behind me in tears and crying just because she was so proud of her daughter getting this full-time job at this wonderful Chicago company. And that relationship with the families is so critical. But to me, it's just so rewarding to see the impact we're having.
At the end of the day, how do you know that you're making a difference?
I look for those individual stories when I see the amazing progress that someone has made. And I just think of a story like Doug. Doug is somebody who came to us a few years ago, a young man in his 30s, early 30s, had never really worked a full-time job before due to his developmental disability. He'd been living with his mom. And we put him through our training at the Aspire Career Academy. And, you know, this is it's been an amazing transformation where now he works as a dishwasher at one of the Hyatt hotels in Chicagoland, and he's gotten raises, he's gotten promoted, and it's been the most amazing thing to see how much this job has made an impact on Doug, but also the impact it's made on the Hyatt Hotel, the Hyatt Lodge. They said to us, and this is the most unbelievable thing, can you clone him? We need 9 more Dougs. And that, to me, when I get feedback like that, tells me we're doing something right.
Well, this is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest is Jim Kales, the president and CEO of Aspire in Chicago, Illinois. Jim, if people who are listening to the program would like to have more information, where can they find you?
They can visit AspireChicago.com, www.AspireChicago.com, learn more about what we do, and also learn about, I didn't get to say a lot, but we have a coffee company that employs adults with disabilities called Aspire Coffee Works, and that is at AspireCoffeeWorks.com. Check it out, and we'd love to connect with more folks.
Well, I know you have a great new facility, and you've got a great program going there. And I'd encourage people to go to the website and learn more about what you do. Jim, thanks for being a guest in the Lincoln Radio Program.
Thank you, Joe, so much. It's been a pleasure.
Back to you, Loman.
As Congress debates infrastructure investment, they are also talking about how to pay for it. On this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Beth Ann Mumford of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania says a hike in the federal gas tax could be on the way.
If your family is like mine, you spend a lot of money on gas to get to and from work, taking the kids to art class or soccer practice, or just driving to the family vacation. But what many Pennsylvanians don't know is there's a secret hidden in every tank of gas. In Pennsylvania, for every gallon we buy, we pay nearly 80 cents in state and federal gas taxes. In fact, our state gas tax is almost double the national average, and Pennsylvanians have the highest gas tax burden in the country. Don't worry, though. It could get even worse if Washington has its way. Some lawmakers are talking about funding a massive infrastructure bill by more than doubling the federal gas to 43 cents per gallon. This increase would cost us an additional $240 a year per household in Pennsylvania. Combined with Pennsylvania's highest in the nation gas tax, families would be spending more than a dollar a gallon just in gas taxes alone. In total, almost $1,000 a year. This will be especially painful for lower and middle class families who spend a much larger percentage of their income on fuel. Pennsylvanians already pay some of the highest gas prices in the nation. A massive gas tax hike will make it even harder for those who can least afford it to get by. And the pain would be felt way beyond the pump, because higher fuel prices make it more expensive for companies to get products to stores. Businesses will likely pass those costs on to their customers. That means everything you buy, from groceries to clothing, will cost more to pay for the gas to get it to the store. If you've looked at your paycheck, you know that Pennsylvania families are now just beginning to see bigger paychecks and more money in their pockets because of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Higher prices for gas and groceries would quickly eat into that windfall. Even worse, higher gas taxes will hurt Pennsylvania families and at the same time do nothing to solve our underlying problem that's keeping us from modernizing our nation's infrastructure. Gas tax dollars are already supposed to fund the construction and maintenance of our nation's interstate highway system. But according to the Government Accountability Office, only 6% of the Highway Trust Fund, which is paid for by the gas tax, is used for major construction, reconstruction, or rehabilitation of highways. Instead of spending money repairing existing roads and bridges or building new ones, much of the funding is being siphoned off. Gas tax dollars have been used to build bike paths, plant flowers, and fund countless other projects that have nothing to do with maintaining our nation's highways and bridges. When money isn't being redirected, it's being misspent. Miles of red tape can put the brakes on projects and add millions of dollars to the cost. Getting the green light to start grading, paving, or building can take years. It requires compliance with countless regulations, approval from a slew of agencies, and mandatory environmental studies. Cronyism and waste make things worse. With prevailing wage requirements and project labor agreements that unfairly favor unionized construction companies driving up the cost of construction. The calls for more of our gas money might be more convincing if the federal government was making every penny count now, but we know it isn't. If Congress wants to get serious about modernizing America's infrastructure, legislators can start ensuring current gas tax dollars are being spent responsibly. Lawmakers should cut unnecessary red tape and stop spending the Highway Trust Fund on unrelated projects. Pennsylvania's pocketbooks are closed. I'm Beth Ann Mumford, State Director of Americans for Prosperity. Find us on the web at www.afppennsylvania.com.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRRN-FM and WKNB-FM in Warren, along with WCHEAM in Westchester, Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is now just a couple of weeks away. It will be April 6th and 7th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier conservative event each year here in the Keystone State. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Fox News contributor Byron York. There will be a wide array of speakers, including former U.S. Senator Tom Coburn and Maine Governor Paul LePage, along with issue panels and workshops. You can get complete information and register for this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.